connect the dots. This is Allison Rose Levy, and I'm here with you every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm a longstanding journalist of food, health, and the environment, and each week on Connect the Dots, we discuss different facets of what affects our personal, community, and societal well-being in terms of all of the different things that go on with our food, water, air, and earth, with our communities, with our society, and with our eye on maintaining ecological stability to the extent now possible on planet Earth. So each week on this program, I talk with different experts, advocates, thought leaders, scientists, researchers, filmmakers, organizers, and a whole host of people about all of the different things that are impacting us and that we impact and the choices and decisions we can make both personally, as communities, and as a society. So we get into a lot of science, a lot of public policy, and we also do some healthy living. And actually, I think we're going to be at the intersection of all of that in today's show, which I'm really thrilled about. Joining us today is Brenda Sanders. She's a food justice activist in Baltimore City who works to improve access to healthy foods in low-income communities. As executive director of Better Health, Better Life, Brenda coordinates Eating for Life, a community-based workshop that teaches the basics of healthy plant-based eating. She's also co-director of Open the Cages Alliance, an animal advocacy organization where she co-organizes the Vegan Living Program, a six-week educational program that teaches the basics of vegan living. I'm so glad to have you joining us today, Brenda Sanders. Welcome to Connect the Dots.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're doing a lot of great work at this particular nexus, and I think it's just really incredible. You know, one of the things, the whole food justice issue is something that I think it's really important for my audience to become more aware of. Just as background, Brenda, I have spent many years in the healthy living community, writing books, ghostwriting books, writing articles. I'm an early reporter of the integrative health movement. And, you know, what we do is kind of go reader by reader and individual by individual, trying to both orient people to what constitutes healthy living in a society where we have a lot of unhealthy foods, cheaply made, subsidized, pushed on people. And at the same time, there are those who've become kind of, and I'm certainly one of them, very committed to healthy eating and, you know, to recipes and food choices and the effects of different foods, while kind of, you know, and proponents of organic, while not really looking around us to see whether the healthy nutrition that we preach is really available to everyone. And what it says about us if we're just kind of concerned about our own, you know, healthy nutrition and aren't doing everything possible to support efforts to make this a way of life for everybody. And I think it's a real blind spot in, you know, the kind of greater healthy living program. So I'm really, really thrilled that you're not only working in community to turn that around, and I'd like to hear, you know, your success as well as the obstacles that you encounter, but that you're also stepping out to educate more people about the food justice issue. Can you tell us a little bit more about how you see that?
Sure. So I have been very interested in healthy lifestyle and for about 20 years now. And I kind of stumbled across information about it. I was kind of in a phase where I just was finding out more information about the body and how to best take care of the body. And I became really convinced that, you know, healthier, vibrant plant foods was the way that I wanted to go. But then I would look around in the community. I was raised very poor in the housing projects of Baltimore City. And I would look around at everybody was ill. You know, folks would get to a certain age and then you would just have high blood pressure. You would just have heart disease. You would just have diabetes. And it was very much accepted that this was just going to happen. And when I started being healthier and eating healthier and really paying attention to my body, I started to understand that this was, a lot of these ailments were food-related, were lifestyle-related, and it just hurt to see so many people around me getting sick and dying at such high percentages, and so I just decided that I would take it upon myself, actually, to do something about it, and so that was how the Eating for Life workshops were sort of born. I just decided, I've been living this way for years. I feel great. I had no idea how I was going to help other people, but I knew that it had to start with food. And so I just started going around and knocking on doors, churches, community centers, you know, going to health fairs, doing these healthy cooking demos and showing people, you know, there is another way to eat. There is another way to live. There are better choices that we can make. And it sort of, you know, it all kind of expanded from there. And what I found was that folks don't want to be unhealthy. And that's the biggest misconception. You know, people outside of low-income communities sometimes look at folks who are living a certain way, eating a certain way, and whose health is suffering, and they may think, oh, well, they just want to be in that situation. And that couldn't be further from the truth. It's just that these are the foods that are accessible in low-income communities. And so, you know, just like anybody else, if you grow up and you know, you are around fresh fruits and vegetables and grocery stores and farmers markets, then that's normal. That's food. That's what you eat. When you grow up in these neighborhoods where there are just convenience stores, carryouts, and corner stores that are pushing these processed, packaged, non-foods is what I call them, then you believe that that's normal and that's what food is. And so the biggest challenge for us here doing food justice work is the education piece, is introducing families and individuals to a different way of doing things. And we've been having a lot of success mainly because of the fact that people want something better, and that's been across the board.
Yeah, you know, that is fantastic. You know, one of the things that that I have written about and covered a great deal is my incredible frustration with the fact that, you know, yes, healthy food, healthy nutrition is, you know, on one level, it's a personal choice. If you don't buy it, if you don't know what it is, if you can't afford to buy it, if it's not available in your neighborhood, or if for reasons of food addiction, you know, or eating, you know, in a style that all your family eats and all of that kind of thing, if you don't put it in your mouth, you know, obviously that's your choice. But a lot of it is also contextual, right? You know, are we, you know, while we're lecturing to people, or as you point out, making judgments about, false judgments about people, you know, do we have the guts to look at our food system, to make the changes that make foods healthier and more widely available, you know, and to give people resource and access, and then to do the link that you're doing, which is, you know, acquaint them with the foods and, you know, acquaint folks with the foods and show them how to eat them and give them that experience, and also do the larger piece of making them available in the neighborhoods. You know, I have to tell you something, which is going to sound, you know, strange, but I've been into, you know, healthy nutrition for as long as you, and I'm a little older, probably a bit longer. And I years ago had the idea of trying to do that bridge piece, you know, that you're doing, which I just think is so fantastic. And I was going to, like, I had this whole thing where I approached the why, and can we, you know, do classes where we teach people to make smoothies, we teach people how to make a healthy pizza, we, you know, we do a learn to cook, and you know, I, as like a middle-aged white lady at the time, was not the right person to be, you know, doing that for our communities. But I was just so clear that if we don't build that bridge, no one's going to cross it, and then we're going to stand on the other side and blame people. So, you know, how do people in your community, you know, respond when, they probably have good culinary skills to begin with or not. I mean, like, what is their reaction when they they taste these other foods and they learn how to prepare them? Like, how do they react and what recipes do you use? Like, what do you share with them to get them started? What's the entree, level of it?
Sure. So for a lot of the folks who we advocate to, this is new information. So all they've ever known is these unhealthy foods, but they're very, very open to at least listening and sort of even with a sense of skepticism, being like, okay, I'll try it, I'll try anything once kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
What we try to do with the education piece is really plug in to the community and relate to wherever they happen to be. Soul
mm-hmm.
food is a big thing in the communities where I work. And so being able to make foods that taste really good and that use the same combinations of spices and veggies and things like that that
mm-hmm.
remind people of that cultural connection that they have to food, I think is a big step towards helping people to kind of be willing to try new things.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, I'm all about affordability. So
mm-hmm.
I'm not going to be necessarily introducing people to new exotic, superfoods and things that grow in jungles halfway across the country, halfway across
right.
the world.
Right.
I am, getting right in there with the foods that folks are used to, the greens,
mm-hmm.
the collards, the kales, the mustard greens, the root veggies are really big in our communities, as well as, the things like squashes and pumpkin and, things like that. And just really using the same spice blends and the curries just flavors that, the gravies and sauces that folks are used to,
mm-hmm.
and then just omitting these unhealthy animal products from whatever the dish is. So we'll do chili, a big hearty pot of chili, and it tastes like chili. It just doesn't have the ground beef,
mm-hmm.
We'll do stir fries. We'll do a lot of things with sauteed greens and with onions and peppers and garlic and just really bring the flavor, I love working with beans, and most of the folks who we're doing these workshops for are very familiar with beans. I grew up eating dry beans because they're very cheap. And, they're
mm-hmm.
hearty, and you can do so many different things with them. And so we do a lot of bean dishes. We do a lot of stuff with just lots and lots of veggies and with sauce bases because, sometimes the sauce makes the dish,
mm-hmm.
And so we might do like a sort of a teriyaki or a barbecue something like that, like a Szechuan. And these are foods that folks are used to getting from the carryout,
except
mm-hmm. instead of having the meat products and the animal products, we're now substituting either a bean or maybe, some vegetable protein like the soy protein or the wheat protein. And so suddenly there's this dish that's really light, folks eat it and, they'll eat a whole plate of it and say, I don't feel heavy. Usually after
mm-hmm.
I eat a whole plate of food, I feel heavy. I want to go to sleep. This is amazing. I just ate a whole plate of food, and I feel vibrant.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like
mm-hmm.
I could go run a race. And so just having that kind of, and then we invite the children in, and of course the children just want to eat something that tastes good. They
mm-hmm.
they don't have any kind of distinction between, oh, it has to have this thing in it or it has to have that thing in it. They just want it to be yummy. And so that when the children are approve and the parents are like, oh, my children will eat this. Okay,
mm-hmm.
I'm in. And so we just have a really, really great time with the education piece, and just pulling people in with delicious plant foods. And we've just gotten nothing but positive responses. You talked about some of the challenges. The only challenge for us is getting in to do these demonstrations. So getting into these spaces where folks may not necessarily be as open, you know, getting into the community centers that are definitely starting to open up to healthier programming, you know, getting into the churches that are starting to look at, you know, their church population and saying, okay, we're really unhealthy. But maybe it has something to do with the food. And so that's the biggest challenge, is getting the door to open so that we can come in.
Let me ask you something. Tell me a little bit your rationale for a vegan diet. From a health perspective,
okay.
Or from an economic perspective, or, you know, whatever your perspective is, or from a kindness to animals perspective, you know, share that with us.
Yeah, so it's just such a combination of all of those things. Initially, it was about, you know, I just became convinced that the body, and certainly my body, was responding better to plant foods. And so, you know, I would introduce that to family and friends, and they would have these really great results. And so it was more like from personal experience, and then I started reading more and doing more research, and it definitely seemed to, you know, the research seemed to support this idea that I had that, you know, perhaps when people go into the doctor with the beginning stages of heart disease or, you know, high blood pressure, and the doctors say, increase your fruit and veggie intake, maybe there's something to that. You know, maybe there's something to this idea that fruits and vegetables, nuts, grains, and seeds, beans and legumes are doing something good for the body. And so as I started to really research the meat industry, the animal agriculture industry more, I just kept stumbling across all this horrible information about the devastating effect that animal agriculture is having on our environment, and, you know, now with all of the information around climate change and all the environmental degradation that we are responsible for, I felt even more motivated to try to talk to people and convince people, okay, let's move away from this really harmful industry and move, you know, into a space that's more sustainable and healthier. And then, of course, I could not ignore. I tried for the longest time. Everybody wants to ignore animal abuse. I don't want to know. I don't want to hear about it. Don't tell me about that. It's going to make me feel bad. And we've all gone through that because nobody wants to hurt animals. I've never met a single person who has said, you know, yeah, I want to hurt animals. I just think that we should hurt animals as much as possible. But when it comes to our food system, we really want to divorce the animals from the food. And so I kind of got to a place where I was no longer able to deny that the way that we were doing animal foods, the fact that we were doing animal foods, there was a victim, you know? There was somebody who was suffering. And whether we, as a human species, whether we give any validity to the idea that these animals have the right to not have these experiences, or whether or not we have the right to impose these experiences on these animals, I think that, you know, I personally just got to a point where I could no longer deny that this industry, this animal use industry was being exploitative of someone, and I mean, that was just it for me, you know, between the health benefits and the environmental benefits and, you know, not contributing to animal suffering. I mean, it was just a no-brainer for me.
Mm-hmm. And how do the people that you work with feel about that? I mean, do they come around to that? Do they sprinkle in a little ground beef on the side? I mean, you know, like how does that,
yeah.
you know, in other words, what is the transition and what about, do people really, you know, do you see a lot of people really adopting it? Are there people who kind of on the spectrum, well, I'll do more of this, but I may still do a little of that kind of thing? Or, you know, like how does that work?
Well, because we have this comprehensive program through the Vegan Living Program, which is a 6-week education program, we're able to bring folks in and really just take our time with them, mm-hmm. Which is kind of different from Eating for Life. Eating for Life is like a 2-hour food demo. It kind of gives people the skills to go home and be able to start preparing food. But with the Vegan mm-hmm. Living Program, we kind of take them step by step each week of this 6-week program. And so we start with food. We start with a mm-hmm. huge cooking demo that, you know, we're just able to show people, you know, that this food is delicious. After that, the next week, we go into vegan nutrition. And so we convince people by bringing in a nutritionist to talk to them honestly and frankly about these issues around nutrition, that they're not going to, you know, pass out from protein deficiency, you know, one day into eating plant foods. And then the third week, I do a talk. I do a lecture that kind of connects the dots to the ethics of the lifestyle, to, you know, the environmental impacts and all of that. You know, at that point, we take folks to an animal sanctuary, because really, when you're going to make such a drastic change to your life, you have to see it from every different angle. And so taking mm-hmm. folks to a farm animal sanctuary where they're actually able to meet a pig, to see a cow, you know, and especially mm-hmm. for folks in the inner city, they've never mm-hmm. seen a pig. They've never seen a cow. They've never been around a living, you know, clutch mm-hmm. chicken. mm-hmm. And so I would say that the animal sanctuary trip is probably the most profound experience for most of the people mm-hmm. who go through the program, because you, at that point, you kind of have to face it. Really, mm-hmm. I mean, the animals actually have faces, you know? And mm-hmm. so you have to really be honest with yourself and say, okay, this mm-hmm. is what I have been participating in. You know, now I have to make a decision as to what I now feel comfortable doing. Mm-hmm. And then we have the graduation, and, you know, folks are really, I mean, it's a very emotional time, and folks talk about how, you know, how just in that 6-week time, that their health has already improved. Just across the board, like my blood pressure went down. My so-and-so hasn't been kicking up. My allergies have gone away. And so, you know, we have all these success stories. You know, after the program, we stay involved. We stay connected. We have, you know, monthly potlucks and this and that, and we try to keep people engaged. And sometimes, you know, folks will come to us and say, yeah, you know, I kind of slipped up. I had this. I had some pizza. It was a party, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But then we have lots and lots of folks who are, you know, they'll just email us and be like, still vegan, you know, and just really, you know, we see them out at, you know, different events or at, you know, restaurants or whatever, and they just come up and they're like, I'm still doing it. I'm still at it. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, we have a whole spectrum of experiences. You know, we've had people who are like, yeah, I really appreciate the program, but it's not for me. That's mm-hmm. very rare, but it has happened. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, but I think overall what we're bringing to the community, you know, this new information, this exciting way of being, of living, has been a net benefit to everybody involved.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How many people have been through the program?
Yeah, so the program existed. Open the Cages Alliance started doing the Vegan Living Program in 2011. I came on a couple years later, and just since I've been doing the program with Open the Cages Alliance, we've had literally hundreds of people come through the program. I mean, mm-hmm. They just come in droves. They, you know, we advertise for it. We put it out there. We get lots of flyers out. Baltimore is sort of ready. You know, I feel like some cities have already kind of, you know, had their health revolution, and so it's kind of normal, you know, places like L.A., New York, and even Philly. Baltimore is sort of revving up and really picking up momentum with the whole lifestyle revolution. And so folks are just ready. And so we've had, like, this past program, and this past spring we had 150 people come through the program. So
that's
it's
a lot.
Really, we keep having to get bigger venues because we have more people. Yeah, so, I mean, it's just, I can't even express how exciting and how just invigorating it is to be doing this work at this time in Baltimore City.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And who is supporting your efforts? Because obviously, you know, all that food and all of that, I mean, you know, it doesn't come cheaply. And how did you bring that about? Because I think, I mean, it sounds like the model for the program is just fantastic. You know, like, how would others replicate your model and do it in their community? Because, you know, that's that could be a challenge maybe.
Yeah, and I will say that the fact that we are absolutely dedicated to making sure that it is always free, I look at this as life-saving information. There are so many lives that are saved when people change their lifestyle in this way. And and I don't think that life-saving information should cost people, because, you know, when this information costs, then somebody is going to be prohibited from being able to get it. And so we just fundraise. I mean, we've been fortunate to have a couple of organizations who have come, you know, who've stumbled across us in our program and had mercy on us. There's an organization, a Well-Fed World, for instance, who, you know, they are involved in hunger relief activities, and so they've been generous. I'm now working with an organization called Vegan Outreach that has been very generous with redirecting some of these funds, you know, from these big donors to these on-the-ground grassroots programs. And then sometimes, you know, like, folks who've gone through our program and who really have benefited from it will donate money. But for the most part, it's all about just getting out there and fundraising and just trying to raise the money to make sure that these services are free for everybody.
Yeah, I totally get how they have to be free to the people participating, because it's too hard a leap. I mean, this is something really, you know, the government itself should really be doing, it sounds like. You know, I mean, wouldn't you think? I mean, you know, like, they're subsidizing the wrong things, you know, it seems, unfortunately.
Yep.
And what do you do about, you know, making the foods more available in communities for people to, you know, follow up and be able to get them? Is that an issue?
That was a huge issue, and I am very solution-oriented. So as I've been going through and doing my advocacy, if people, you know, the first thing, I would do these lectures, and people would say, well, what do I eat? You know, so I, you know, added the cooking demo component, and people said, well, where do I get it? And I realized for a lot of these foods, they literally don't exist in certain communities. And so one of the things that I and some other food justice activists have started doing in certain communities in Baltimore is helping folks to build community gardens. And that's a big deal. I mean, you know, community gardens, urban gardens are starting to pop up like everywhere across the country. And so there are support systems in place. There is funding in place. If you're lucky, you can get funding to start your community garden. In Baltimore, we have lots and lots of vacant lots in the city, in these same communities. And so we've been adopting these lots and actually helping the community to build these gardens, because a big part of the food justice issues, specifically in Baltimore, is around people being disenfranchised, people being disempowered and not having any control whatsoever over the food system in their communities. And so, you know, what better way to empower people to have some semblance of control over their food system than for them to help them to actually grow food themselves? I mean, you're literally, you know, with your own hands taking back control of your food system. And so the community gardens have been a big thing. The young folks have been loving it and really, really taking to it. It's a community beautification program. You know, you're bringing green spaces into communities that did not have them before. And so that's one aspect of it. And then, you know, I grew up in communities that, you know, had the corner stores, the convenience stores, the carryouts, and I know what things that are passing for food are available in those places. And so I got together with some other vegan chefs and caterers who I know, and I said, look, let's produce a line of alternatives. And so I don't even know how I had the audacity to think that, you know, I could do all this stuff, but I did. And so we formed a collective, a vegan food collective called Pep Foods. And we are, you know, we've developed a line of non-dairy cheeses that can compete in price, because, you know, our main goal was affordability, that can compete in price now with Kraft and, you know, Velveeta or whatever. And we also developed a line of meat substitutes that are made from wheat protein, a whole line of different flavors. And so our ultimate goal is to get these substitutes into the carryout, into the corner store, so that people do have that alternative right there in their community. And it's been picking up steam. I mean, we're trying to convert, we're trying to renovate a commercial kitchen right now. And so we're kind of in that process because we've been renting kitchen space so that we could supply a few select folks who just had to have our cheese. And so, you know, but just trying to balance, you know, putting out money to rent kitchen space, which is not cheap, with, you know, what was coming in was just kind of a bit much. And so we don't want to expand until we have our kitchen up and running. And then we'll be able to produce these products at, you know, a really low cost and give the people of Baltimore a real alternative to the foods that are currently in our community. So, yeah, we've done a lot.
You're doing things on so many different fronts. I mean, it's just really amazing, actually. It must be, what is in the vegan cheese? Like, what are you using there for ingredients?
Sure. So right now, it is a soy-based cheese, and we're experimenting with some nut-based ones, and then, you know, some nut-free, soy-free bases as well. But right now, the products that we have, the cheddar, American, mozzarella, and pepper jack cheeses that are available locally are soy-based. And they melt, and they're delicious, and people love them. And there are a couple of places that are already carrying, you know, the our cheeses exclusively. And you know, so it's great. We're hoping to be able to expand fairly quickly because folks in Baltimore really want the product. So kind of trying to keep all these different balls in the air and keep all these plates spinning, and you know, it gets. I mean, I don't sleep anymore. But I remember sleep fondly. But it's such important work. You know, I don't know. I think that the effect that I see that the work is having on individuals' lives here in Baltimore probably is what keeps me going.
Wow. So you get that direct feedback all the time. What an amazing thing. And it sounds like the combination of that, the cycle of positive experiences from your work along with, you know, the diet you're doing is basically, you sound like an energy powerhouse, really. So that's kind of thrilling. Now, let me just see. You have an upcoming event, don't you, of some kind, like that's coming up within the next couple of days? What is that? And can you let our listeners know a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So it's called Vegan Soul Fest. It's a festival that celebrates culture and the vegan lifestyle. And So my co-organizer, whose name is Naja Wright, she is also co-owner of a vegan restaurant here in Baltimore called The Land of Kush that Stevie Wonder has eaten at, and, you know, it's a really great restaurant. She and I were just talking one day and talking about the issues, the health disparities that exist in our communities and what we can do about it. You know, something fun, something exciting, something that will bring people out and really generate interest. And we had the idea to do a festival. You know, why not? Let's do a festival. And so we're both doers, you know. And so once we conceived of this festival, within 4 months, we were putting on a festival. And it was no small feat. We were hoping to get a couple hundred people to come out. This was back in 2014. We were hoping, you know, 200-300 people would come out and learn some things, learn from our speakers and check out our cooking demos. And, you know, it would be nice. And over 1,200 people ended up coming out to this festival. And, you know, the local newspaper covered it, and it was just way bigger than we ever could have imagined. The food was fantastic. Everybody enjoyed themselves. But we grew out of the venue, like, immediately. So last year we teamed up with Baltimore City Community College, and they have a whole campus, and we had the festival there. We had 3,500 people come out last year. And so every year it's just been growing exponentially. This year, you know, we're at the same venue. We haven't outgrown the campus yet, but we're expecting at least 5,000 people, if not more, because we've gotten so much interest and so many people are willing to talk about it on the air. And thank you so much for allowing me to talk about it on your show, because it's just this beautiful, it just, you know, we bring in the education piece by bringing in people like Dr. Milton Mills, who is an MD who talks a lot about, you know, just these marginalized communities and how food could be a solution to the health problems that we have. And so he definitely promotes a plant-based diet in his practice. And then, you know, other speakers who are going to be coming out who really focus on more of a healthy, holistic lifestyle. And then, of course, we have the running cooking demos by local vegan chefs and caterers. And, you know, they're very interactive, and folks get to taste these delicious foods and learn how to prepare them. We added entertainment last year, so, you know, there's going to be music on the main stage. We have the Veggie Village, which is where the children hang out and do all kinds of, like, I don't know, healthy, vitality-centered activities. And it's just, I mean, the vendors, we have over 120 vendors this year who are just, I mean, people are still signing up to vend. I don't, we're probably going to have to, like, close registration very soon because people are still having, like, you know, several, you know, people who just heard about it and they're like, I want to have, you know, my product here. I want people to know about my service, or, you know, I want people to know about my organization, and they're coming and registering because they want to be at this event. And it's just a great time. It's just a positive, uplifting, happy event. And it's just it's taken on a life of its own. I never would have imagined that our little festival would have turned into this in just a few years. So Saturday, August 20th, it's coming
and
up.
And where is it? Where would people find it? Yeah, where is it located? And what are the hours of it?
So we'll be on the campus of Baltimore City Community College, which is at 2901 Liberty Heights Avenue in Baltimore City. The festival runs from 12 to 7 p.m. We had to extend it because nobody wanted to go home last year. And so we said, okay, let's extend it a couple hours. So this is going to be definitely, it's a destination event already. We have people coming down from Connecticut, people coming down from Philly, Delaware, New York City, coming up from as far as South Carolina and Atlanta. It's just going to be a really, really amazing experience. And I'm trying to get to wrap my head around how much momentum it's been picking up and get ready for Saturday, because it's, it's going to be something.
Wow, that sounds incredible. Wow. You're quite an organizer. I mean, when you, let me just ask a little bit about you and your, you know, I mean, you're obviously motivated by caring for people, but, you know, how did you develop the kind of organizing and skill set to bring this kind of thing off? I mean, you know, like, you know, is it, do you think, partially the need in your community and, you know, what is, if you had to teach people who want to start organizing, because, you know, with the current election, there's a lot of concern. For example, I do a lot of reporting on the environmental side of things, and there's a lot of concern about where either result in the coming election will be leading our country and hence the world environmentally. And so more and more people are saying that they want to get involved. What would be, you know, your top three tips for either, you know, for people who want to organize? And they've never done it before, let's say.
So the top three. I would say that we need to
move away from this idea.
I'm sorry?
Sorry. I'm saying it could be five if three is too hard or something, you know?
Oh, wow. No. I can address. So I would say folks need to move away from this idea that one person can't make a difference. Because each and every one of us can. And I think that we get so overburdened and so, like, weighed down with how bad things can be that we just kind of give up. We lose hope and we say, oh, you know, it'll never get better. We can't beat the system. We can't change anything. And the fact of the matter is we can. And each individual, and especially when we're talking about at a lifestyle level, you know, each individual can make a difference. And then once you change your lifestyle, then you'll become an inspiration to others. So just changing things about yourself automatically makes you an inspiration to other people, whether they ever tell you that you inspire them, whether you ever find out, you know, the ways in which you affect other people, you do. So that's the first thing. Mm-hmm. Get rid of this idea that one person can't make a difference. And then, you know, a second thing I would say is, follow your heart. You know, a lot of people, because we live in a culture that really kind of encourages us to disconnect from everything and everybody else, we need to reconnect with everything. We need to reconnect, first of all, with ourselves, you know, and just really care for ourselves. And that was, you know, my desire to care for myself was the beginning of my entire journey, you know, to honor me, to honor the body that I'm in, to honor, you know, the life that I have, because it is an honor. And so reconnect with you, reconnect with those around you, and then go even further and reconnect with the planet, you know, this beautiful, like, biodome, biosphere that we live on. I mean, depending on the environment you live in, it might be easier for some people than others to reconnect. A lot of the folks from the communities where I work, it's really hard because there's nothing but asphalt, brick, and cement, you know, and so there's not that necessarily that connection with the planet. But we have to reconnect and follow, you know, that goodness that I believe that we all have within our hearts. And then, you know, once we've established that each person can make a difference and, you know, we reconnect with everybody else, it's about doing. And a lot of us kind of get stuck there because doing takes work. Doing takes you out, often takes you out of your comfort zone. You know, there are very few activists out there, and then most people kind of just go along and live their lives and don't ever really do. But every person who does engage in some kind of activity is making a difference, and that can compound and expand and grow out to something that could be huge, and that could shift the whole balance of what's happening on the planet right now. And so it could be a tiny thing. You know, it could just be that, you know, you decide that you're going to have a weekly potluck, that you're going to invite, you know, the people who you know over and just have this great, you know, positive experience with other people and connect with them on that level. So from there out, you know, it could go to you know, we recently, back in February, we had this event called the Vegan Mac and Cheese Smackdown. And we, you know, again, underestimated what we could actually do. It's February, you know, people are, you know, have cabin fever. They've been, you know, in the house all winter. Let's just engage people, have an event, let them come out, taste vegan mac and cheese. It'll be cool. It'll be cute. It'll be fun. And so we expected that maybe, again, a few hundred people would come out, 300-400 people tops. And it was a beautiful spring-like day, first of all. It was on February 20th. It was a beautiful spring-like day. And the line for this event, this vegan mac and cheese competition, reached 3 blocks down the street. We had over 1,000 people come out. And it was, I mean, it was packed. You know, a lot of people were like, yeah, I just want to get my mac and cheese. And, you know, but, you know, people from the community were kind of coming out and looking and saying, what is this? What is this long line? And people, oh, it's mac and cheese. Okay, they would get in line. And so it was just this big, you know, explosion that was just completely unexpected. Who would have thought that Baltimore would come out in February to eat vegan mac and cheese in those numbers? But you literally just never know. You never know that maybe something small that you plan can end up exploding into something amazing, you know, and so it's about doing. It's about putting yourself out there and deciding I am going to do something. So I guess those would be the three main things that I would say.
That's beautiful. That's really great. It's so inspiring. You know, one of the things, now this may not be an issue in your community, but so, you know, and you know, I'd like to hear perhaps it is or is not. But in the, because you're talking with someone who's preached the healthy style of living to the largely white and, you know, and somewhat more privileged health choir for, oh, I don't know, 30 years, and I'm regarded as one of the very first reporters on these kinds of topics by the, you know, I go way back, right, with doing that. And so one of the great frustrations for me personally, I follow these healthy lifestyles. I encourage friends to do it. I'm, you know, have a health coach training so that I can, you know, just kind of give my put my two cents in with anyone and feel that it's not just, you know, scientific editorial based position, but really, you know, I have the background as a health coach to do that motivation, to encourage and to provide the information. But, you know, one of the things that has not happened as we've done all of these personal steps for, you know, our health, is that people haven't crossed the line to get involved in civic action and protect the food system. You know, so recently we had the president signing into law a kind of false labeling law that really, you know, it masquerades as a labeling law, but it actually makes it, it will make it impossible for people to make their own decisions, you know, and to tell what's in the food that they're buying in terms of whether it contains GMO products or not. And, you know, there was a lot of organizing done around it. But, you know, it turns out that as we built up the whole organic food industry through the organic food movement, you know, the industry took a turn and were more interested in protecting the, you know, the label that went on the organic food than actually assuring that the content is organic. And we have a president who spoke against GMOs when he was a candidate, and then he signed this bill into law. So I felt a tremendous sense of concern and also disappointment because, you know, we educated a lot of people to eat healthy food, and this is more, you know, the kind of first wave white healthy food act, you know, nuts and all that kind of thing, and certainly beneficial on the individual basis. But we didn't educate people to take social action. Now, it could be that your community is right away more aware of some of these adverse roles played by industry or, you know, some of the powers that be in our society, so that for them it's not like, you know, startling news or something that, you know, they're not familiar with. But, you know, maybe that's true or maybe it isn't true. I'd love to hear that. But, you know, do you see your community taking that further step? Because, you know, really healthy foods, I mean, foods, let's put it this way, foods that are healthier than eating a Big Mac, even if they're conventionally grown, you know, that's like a step away from the Big Mac, and that's important. I don't want to minimize that step. But foods that are away from pesticides, glyphosates, you know, that are really healthy and don't contain these harmful ingredients are, you know, at increasing risk of disappearing as an option for us. How do you see your role and your community in, you know, in terms of that kind of question?
So we know it's asking a lot, but
since you seem to be such a can-do person, I have to, like, you know, put that forward too.
Yeah. We have a healthy skepticism of those in power. And the reason why is that we have constantly been, you know, fallen victim to those in power and been marginalized by those in power. And so, you know, if somebody comes along and says, oh, you know, the medical industry is corrupt, it's like, yep, I can see that. You know, oh, the government doesn't, you know, necessarily have, you know, the FDA doesn't have our best interests at heart. Yeah, I believe it. You know, and so it's not that you have to convince people that those who are in power, you know, have interests other than protecting those who don't have power. So that did, you know, that does, as a community organizer, that does kind of give me and other folks like me a leg up, and just we don't have to start from square one with folks and like, oh, well, the government wouldn't do that. They're here to help. Like, no, there's none of that. There is none of that. So we don't have to start from there. In terms of getting information to people, one of the drawbacks to the communities where I work being so crushingly marginalized is that we can't, you know, give too much information all at once. So, you know, we're coming in and we're saying, you know, let's move away from, you know, these harmful foods that are available in your communities. Let's start getting into putting our hands in the dirt and growing food ourselves, and, you know, being more conscious of where we're sourcing our foods from and what we're eating. We, you know, we may not also be able to say, and also come to this march against Monsanto, and this is why you should be there, and this, you know, and so we kind of it kind of feels like we're behind the curve when, you know, trying to get people riled up and active around these injustices, because we're just literally starting people off at, you know, at the beginning of even understanding why this system is harmful to them in the first place. And so, you know, it's like bittersweet. Yeah, it's bittersweet. I wish that I had a formula for creating activists. I've thought about this. I've actually had an organization who wants to fund me going around and teaching people how to be me, how to do what I do. And, you know, I'm kicking around the idea of a PowerPoint and maybe like an informational packet, you know, and I'll teach a class and it'll be great. But that fire, that fire deep down inside you that says I have to do something, can I package that, you know? Can I package that? Can I invoke that in another individual? That is the test. That is the question. And I'm not giving up. I'm not saying that it can't be done. I'm just saying I haven't quite figured it out yet. So
that's totally fascinating. Yeah, I'm not surprised to hear that that people have identified that in you. It's so obvious, and wanting to support it. And you know, it is the gold, really. It is the gold in terms of the shift we need to make in our world. And so, you know, wherever it comes from, within you, in your work on yourself, in your ancestors, in your family, in your community, however it came along, you know, bless it. And, you know, I think you'll find a way, and I think we need that way. So, you know, yeah, it's fantastic what you're doing and what you carry and model and the energy with which you do it. It's just, you know, it's just fantastic. And, you know, you're so incredibly thoughtful about the whole thing, too. You know, so anyway, it's been a total pleasure having you here on Connect the Dots. And, you know, it's just been a real thrill to have you. Tell me again the name of your, it's called the Vegan Soul Fest. Is that the name of your upcoming
Vegan
event?
Vegan Soul Fest.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, and people can get more information at vegansoulfest.com. Really simple.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, if anybody is within driving distance, come out to this event. It's going to be great.
It sounds fantastic. It looks also like we've had a real climate change summer here on the East Coast, and I know that's going on elsewhere. I hope that the weather cools down a little bit this weekend so people can really, here it is online. Oh, yeah, that's fantastic. Oh, that looks like so much fun. Oh, my God, what a great event. Oh, yeah, it's this Saturday.
Yeah.
And hopefully the weather is cooling off as we speak. So, you know, I think a lot of people are going to have a lot of fun attending that. And listeners, if you're one of them, go to vegansoulfest.com. And there's a newsletter, beautiful graphics, superbly done. Thank you so much, Brenda Sanders, for being with us today on Connect the Dots. It's been a total pleasure. The mutual friend who told me about you and raved about you was, you know, 100% right. Good luck with all your activities, including Vegan Soul Fest, and I hope to have you back on again. It's been great talking.
Thank you so much
for
having me. It's been an honor.
And thank you, listeners. Tune in next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Eastern for the next edition of Connect the Dots. Have a great week. I'm Allison Rose Levy. There was pink, but there was the sky.